I would like to welcome everyone to Just the Facts, the We Could Be Wrong, But Who Cares after show that is checking facts on statements made during the show and giving additional fact-based information. I'm Sean, your host. I'm not here to persuade anyone to the left or right or to condemn anyone's stances on a subject. I'm only here to try and provide facts and data to the audience so you can make a better informed decision on your own. If you have specific questions or comments or disagree with me or would like more details on the subject, please email me at wcbwjustthefacts@aol.com. Remember, facts are black and white, not red or blue. I will quote all my sources, and my info about the sources comes from mediabiasfactcheck.com. If anyone has any better sources, please let me know. All right, let's get things started. Oh, well, first, let me get myself up here. I'd like to say, last episode, I didn't know that we didn't have the slideshow. So I'm going to start posting it to the website for on the Facebook page, which is WCBW, Just the Facts, Facebook webpage. So if you want to see, because I realized people weren't seeing the slides, they weren't seeing the reports, they weren't seeing anything, just me talking. I'm going to try to give a little bit more information when I talk, but, excuse me, well, I'll try to stop that too. But if you want to, that's the place. All right. Sorry, guys, asthma. All right, so campaign promises kept. This was a subject that was on there, and I was really interested in this, and how many people, because they were talking about people not keeping campaign promises, which kind of seems to me to be pretty normal. People, you know, I once heard a story that said, it was a Peanuts cartoon that said, how do most fairy tales start? And Charlie Brown looked and said, if I'm elected, I promise. I thought that was kind of funny. So this is from the PolitiFact, and it's Truth Meter Promises, and it's a little bit left-center, but very high factual reporting. So, Obama scorecard, and this is just from what their sources are. If anyone has any better source or wishes to give me additional information, please send to me. promises kept, they had him at 47%, which was 255 promises. This is obviously from two terms. Ones he compromised on were 27%, which is 146. Promises broken, 23%, which is 125. And I picked some of the top five that I thought were interesting. He promised to close Guantanamo Bay Detention Center, and he failed to accomplish that. He also wanted to restrict wireless, warrantless wiretaps, which are the FISA ones, that he tried to accomplish anyway. He didn't. He wasn't able to do that completely. He had to compromise in it. Obama's, another one of his campaign promises was secure the borders. We will add additional personnel, infrastructure, and technology on the border and at our ports of entry, was his comment, and he had to compromise that. Reform mandatory minimum sentences, and that's a promise he kept. He said, we will immediately review sentences to see where we can be smarter on crime and reduce the ineffective warehousing of nonviolent drug offenders. And finally, he said he was going to sign a universal health care bill, and again, he had to compromise on that. I will sign a universal health care bill, his first term as president. Right. Mr. Trump, or President Trump, he kept 23%. He only had one term. 23% of his promises, which was a total of 24. He had to compromise on 22%, and 53 were broken, a total of 55 promises. Number one was, he said, real change begins with immediate repeal and replacement of the disaster known as Obamacare. So he wanted to repeal Obamacare, and he broke that promise. He will build a wall, and Mexico will pay for it. Again, a broken promise. Suspend immigration from terror-prone places. He kept that promise. He said they will stop people immigrating from places like Syria and Libya. Cut taxes for everyone. Again, he had to compromise on that one. And lower business tax rate. Trump said he plans on lowering it from 35 to 15. And he had to compromise on that. It was lowered to 21. Now, let's see. Oh, wait. Okay, there we go. President Biden. And again, he's only in his first year, so there's going to be a lot of them that are either not done yet. So 17% of his campaign promises were kept so far, 4% are compromised, 24% stalled, and 45% in the works. Number one, he said, we'll get COVID under control. He said, I'm never going to raise the white flag and surrender. We're going to beat the virus. We're going to get it under control. I promise you. And that's in the works. And I also, sorry, I have to say that President Trump started that. So President Trump started getting the virus under control. But that's a campaign promise that President Biden made. Get bipartisan cooperation on the economy. Again, that was a compromise. He hasn't got complete bipartisan, only on some things, not on all things for sure. use the National Commission to address policing issues. He basically said, I promise you, there will be a National Commission on Policing out of the White House where I bring everyone to the table, including police chiefs, including civil rights activists, including the NAACP, including the African, the Latino community. We're going to sit down there and we're going to work it out. That's been stalled. He was going to put U.S. on a course to net zero emissions by 2050. That's in the works. And last, he said he will improve Obamacare, and that's in the works. He said not only will we restore Obamacare, but build on it. So again, in the works. Energy independence. This is from Forbes, which is a right center, mostly factual. This is an article by Robert Rapier, and he basically said if energy independence means we produce more energy than we consume, then the U.S. is still energy independent. So let's take a look. A correct accounting would be to add up all of our energy production, which is oil, natural gas, coal, and renewables, and then subtract our net energy consumption. The U.S. is a net exporter of coal and natural gas, so it really comes down to petroleum balance. And again, I'm going to be reading a lot of this time, which I didn't last time because I didn't know everyone wasn't seeing the slides. U.S. net imports have been declining since 2005. That year, U.S. net imports of petroleum products, gasoline, diesel, jet fuel, etc., averaged about 12.5 million barrels per day. By the time President Obama left office, that number was down to 4.8 million barrels per day. When President Trump took over, the downward trend continued. During President Trump's last year in office, the net import number turned negative, so basically saying we were energy independent. It is therefore true that we gained energy independence under President Trump. Net exports in 2020 averaged 635,000 barrels per day for the year. COVID-19 hit, and the results of a widespread stay-at-home order, U.S. energy demand and energy production both plummeted. For the first 4 months of 2020, net exports averaged 1 million barrels per day, but then in May, we had to start importing again. May and June, the U.S. imported 750,000 barrels per day, and in the second half of the year, net imports once again became net exports. So for the full year of 2020, the U.S. became a net exporter for the first time in modern history. In 2021... Let's see, where is it? We oscillated between net imports and net exports on a month-to-month basis. In certain months, we were net importers, and hence we lost our energy independence per that definition. And in other months, we were a significant net exporter. But overall, for 2021, when they averaged it up, we were net exporters. So for both 2020 and 2021, we were energy independent. All right, this was an interesting one. This was from, someone said that we have the most highest oil reserves by country by far. And I was trying to look stuff up, and I found a couple sources, but I'm not happy with them. So first one was CNN, which as you can see is left bias for sure, and also mixed factual reporting. So, and this was a number that stated, yes, the U.S. has 264 billion barrels of oil reserve, higher than Russia, Saudi Arabia, Canada, and Iran. I find it interesting they don't list Venezuela there. I don't like that really left or really right. I try to stay left center, right center, or least biased, and especially mostly or high or very high factual. So this was not a good source. But this is the source I found that backed up this statements made by one or two of the panelists. And again, panelists, if you can send me information, I will print a retraction saying, hey, whoa, if it's a non-biased source, I'll say, hey, I was wrong last episode. This is what someone sent me, and I got good data on it now. So I have no problem printing retraction and saying I was wrong. So there's a Worldometer, which as you can see is least biased and high factual reporting. On this whole oil reserve. And I tried to look up, there's someone mentioned riceenergy.com and media bias fact check or no source I could find basically rated it. So I don't know what it's rated. So I didn't try to look into that. But basically, here's what they say for countries with the highest oil reserves. And number one is Venezuela, which has 1,299, almost 300,000, $600 billion in oil reserves. And this was in 2016. That's the latest data I could find. Then Saudi Arabia, then Canada, then Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, Russia, which has $80 billion oil barrel reserves, Libya, Nigeria, and finally the U.S. was number 11 with $35 billion barrels of oil reserved. And that accounts for about 2.1% of the world share. Carbon emissions by country. This was interesting because I was questioning this also. I'm like, really? Is our carbon emissions really that good or that bad compared to other countries and other countries that are major countries worse than us? So I wanted to find this out. So again, I went to Worldometer because they're least biased and high factual reporting. So I find them a very good source if I can find the information on there. So I looked it up two ways. First is by ranking of highest carbon emissions, and that's at the top. And you can see China was number one for sure. They ended up being 7.38 per capita, but the total emissions, because of their population, was definitely higher than the U.S.'s. The share of the world was 29.18%. Then came the United States, which was at 14.02%. Then India, Russia, Japan, and Germany. But now, if we look per capita, the highest numbers there are. So that actually shows CO2 emissions per person. And that's the bottom one. U.S. is ranked 60th down the list. And one of our panelists was mentioning this, that other countries aren't doing it. But if you look at these countries, there are a lot of them are very small countries. Qatar, Montenegro, Kuwait, Trinidad and Tobago. United Arab Emirates is a little bit bigger, obviously. Oman, Canada was number 7 on the list to me, which was surprising. Brunei, Luxembourg, Bahrain, Australia, Estonia, Gibraltar, which only has 572,000 people, but still per capita, 16. Falkland Islands, Saudi Arabia, and then finally the U.S., which ranked number 16. So by carbon emissions, I guess it depends on which quota you look up, total emissions produced, or what it is per capita. But I think all of our countries need to start reducing carbon emissions for sure. Oh, someone was mentioning gas stations, and I wanted to look up some data on that. The problem is, I couldn't find any rated sites that talked about who owns what for gas, who does this, who does that. So basically, I went to Women's Day. I figure if I'm going to find a source that has less, you know, ratings on, or not rated, Women's Day sounded like one that at least was pretty neutral to me. I don't know if you guys have any comments or you think, oh my God, Women's Day is so left or so right. Please let me know. The three points I thought were really interesting, which was number one, gas stations don't make that much money off gas. They get only pennies per gallon after taxes and operating costs. Gas station owners actually hate high gas prices just as much as you do. As the National Association of Convenience Stores explains, fuel retailers typically see profitability decrease as prices rise and increase when prices fall. Instead, most of their profit comes from convenience items sold in their stores, like sunglasses, snacks, medicines, all that stuff. It says it accounts for more than 60% of the total earnings. Number two, most gas stations are owned independently, and this is something Renee brought up. While most people are familiar with big brands like Shell, ExxonMobil, BP, about 0.4% of gas stations in the country were owned by one of the five major oil companies. The rest of them are owned and operated by independent business people who set their own prices. And last, I just thought this was a fun fact, that a well-known fast food chain started out as a gas station. In the 1940s and 50s, Colonel Sanders, the founder of KFC, started off by owning gas stations that also sold chicken dinners. His station suffered after the construction of interstate highway systems, so he went just to selling chicken. I just thought that was kind of interesting and funny. All right. Oh, Afghanistan timeline. Someone was mentioning Afghanistan. I just want to run down kind of a quick highlights of what happened in Afghanistan from the very beginning until the end. And this is on the council. I got this from the Council of Foreign Relations. Least biased, very high factual reporting. So basically what happened, Afghanistan started on September 11, 2001, when the terror struck the United States at the World Trade Center. September 18, 2001, President Bush signed into law Joint Resolution authorizing the use of force against those responsible for attacking the United States. October 7, 2001, that was basically the opening salvo. The U.S. military, with British support, began bombing a bombing campaign against the Taliban forces. December 9, 2001, Taliban collapsed. The end of the Taliban regime is generally tied to this date when the Taliban surrendered Kandahar and Taliban leader Omar flees the city. January of 2004, basically a constitution for Afghanistan. An assembly of 502 Afghan delegates agree on the constitution for Afghanistan. October 29, 2004, Bin Laden surfaces again. February 17, 2009, Obama recommits to Afghanistan. He was the new U.S. president, announced the plans to send 17,000 more troops to the war zone. November 2010, timetable for security transition. And basically, this was a summit in Lisbon where NATO member countries signed a declaration agreeing to hand over full responsibility for security in Afghanistan to the Afghans by the end of 2014. May 1st, 2011, Osama bin Laden was killed. June 22nd, 2011, Obama announces troop drawdowns. October 7th, 2011, it was basically 10 years of the war. The U.S. war in Afghanistan marks its 10th year with about 100,000 U.S. troops deployed in Afghanistan. President Obama plans to withdraw all combat troops by 2014. May 27, 2014, Obama announces U.S. troop withdrawal. President Obama announces a timetable for withdrawing of most U.S. forces from Afghanistan now by the end of 2016. August 21st of 2017, Trump signed a prolonged Afghan war, which basically Trump outlined his Afghanistan policy and addressed to troops in Arlington, Virginia, saying that though his original instinct was to pull out, we will instead press ahead. January of 2018, Taliban launches major attacks amid U.S. escalation. November 2020, U.S. announces troop withdrawal. April 14th of 2021, Biden decides to complete U.S. withdrawal by September 11th. President Biden announces that the United States will not meet the deadline set under the U.S.-Taliban agreement made by President Trump that would have all troops withdrawing by May 1st, instead releasing a plan for a full withdrawal by September 11th. And again, that was over 4 months later than agreed to by President Trump. And finally, August 15th, 2021, Afghan government collapses as the Taliban take Kabul. Finally, where are we? August 16th, 2021, Biden defends withdrawal. President Biden basically admits he made the right decision, President Biden says the administration made the right decision in ending U.S. military involvement in Afghanistan, arguing that the U.S. counterterrorism mission was complete, but he acknowledges that troop withdrawal has been messy and blames Afghan security forces for failing to counter the Taliban. I'm not going to argue yay or nay on whether it was Biden's fault or whether it was Afghan security fault. It wasn't done right. That's the only thing I have to say. It was not done right from the very beginning. August 26, 2021, 13 U.S. service members were killed during attempting to withdraw. And finally, August 30th, 2021, the 20-year war ends as U.S. completes withdrawal. The last military forces depart Afghanistan, leaving it under Taliban rule. The exit follows a chaotic two-week withdrawal process during which more than 120,000 people were evacuated. So it was a pretty messy time. All right. This was interesting. Did the Biden administration have a meeting with TikTok stars? Someone mentioned that, and I thought that was kind of interesting. I hadn't heard about it, so I wanted to look it up. So I went to Daily Mail, which is far right again. I don't like far, but and low factual. And it said basically Joe Biden deploys teenage TikToker stars to blame soaring gas prices and inflation on Russia as the U.S.'s worst cost of living crisis in 40 years tanks president's rating ahead of midterms. So I had to dig a little deeper because I told you I don't like far right are really right, and especially low factual. So I found in Fox Business, which is right center, the Fox Business, and mostly factual. White House drafts TikTok stars to blame Putin for rising gas prices. The Biden administration tapped teenage TikTok influencers last week to coordinate messaging on Russia's invasion of Ukraine and blame Vladimir Putin for rising gas prices, according to a recording of a call between White House officials and the social media stars. So it looks like you did. I didn't hear anything about that. It would have been kind of nice to hear that in the news sometime. I guess it was on Fox Business, but I didn't hear it on any other stations. Oh, yes. Oil company profits. Let's talk a little bit about that. This was from Fortune Magazine, which, as you can see, or if you can't see, is right, center, and highly factual. Basically, ExxonMobil, Chevron, Shell, BP, and Total have all returned to a profitability for this year's fourth quarter earning. In fact, reporting the biggest profit they've seen in 8 years at the end of 2021 fourth quarter. Of course, if we look at the flip side, the first to report earnings was ExxonMobil, which had earnings of $23 billion in 2021, a major swing from the loss of $22.4 billion in 2020. So there is some mixed messages on the profiting. In 2021, they seem to have done really good. 2020 was not so good because of the pandemic, obviously. Ooh, Mexican minimum wage. This I thought was kind of cool, too. And this was from Reuters, which is least biased, very high factual. This is from talking about in Mexico City, December 1st, 2021. Mexico's government and business groups have agreed to increase daily minimum wage in 2022 by 22%. And this was from the president, Lopez Obrador. He said this on the Wednesday in late November, taking another small step towards addressing Mexico's vast wealth disparity. It's the biggest wage hike in normal terms that the president has pushed through since taking office in 2018, with a vow to prioritize the poor and revise a decade-long decline in workers' purchasing power. His administration raised the minimum wage by 16% in 2019, 20% in 2020, and by 15% in 2021. The wage remains far below U.S. levels, however, and also follows a marked uptick in inflation this year. The federal minimum wage in neighboring United States is $7.25 an hour, although the rate is higher in many states, especially as we know here in California. The latest increase in the yardstick will move Mexico's minimum wage to 260.34 pesos, which is about $12.15 a day in the northern border zone, and about 172.87 pesos, which is $8.07 a day in the rest of the country. So there has been an increase in maximum wage, which I'm very happy for the Mexican people for that. Richest people in the world. I don't remember what even we were talking about on that, but someone was talking about how the rich people. This is from Forbes, which is right center and mostly factual. So this is the top 15 supposedly richest people in the world. And as you can see, number one is still Jeff Bezos, even after giving half his money away, where he's worth $177 billion. He's from the United States. Everyone knows he's Amazon. Elon Musk is number two. Bernard Arnault from France is number three with $150 billion. Bill Gates from the U.S. from Microsoft. Finally going down below that $100 billion mark is Mark Zuckerberg with $97 billion. Warren Buffett with $96. Larry Ellison, $93. Larry Page, $91. Let's see. Then we go down to number 10. Mukesh Ambani, $84.5 billion. He's from India, and he's diversified out, I guess, in the source of his money. Amanco Ortega, $77 billion from Spain, fashion and retail. Myers and Family, $73 billion from France, again, fashion and retail. Then we got Zhang Shanshan, $68.9 billion from China, and he's involved in beverages, pharmaceuticals, foods. Steve Ballmer, $68.7 billion, part of Microsoft in the United States. And rounding out the top 15 is Ma Houghton, $65.8 billion from China, and internet media is where he's located. So out of the top 15, 9 of the richest people in the world are from the U.S., 2 from France, 2 from China, 1 from India, and 1 from Spain. So it's definitely pretty U.S. heavy. All right, well, guys, that's it. I'd like to thank you for listening to Just the Facts, that we could be wrong, but who cares after show. You can find the video. Remember, if you... what's going on here? Mom music. What's wrong with my music? If you want to actually watch the slides and see the video, you can go to the WCBW Just the Facts Facebook page. And also, I encourage anyone to write me at WCBWJustTheFacts@AOL.com. I'm always happy, again, to write a retraction if someone can send me data. Say a retraction if someone sends me data showing I'm wrong. Or that there's a better source that I could get information from. Again, facts are black and white, not red or blue, so I'm not here to take one side or the other. I'm just trying to find interesting things for you people to understand and try to help you better make a decision about the show. So again, I hope you have a great day. Thank you for listening, and hope you'll listen in next week. Please send me emails if you have anything you want to say.